From Pacifica Radio, KPFT 90.1 Houston, this is Open Journal in Exile. Open Journal is the Houston community magazine of the airwaves. Join us as Duane Bradley and Stephanie Coleman explore the wonder that is the Petro Metro and the people who make it happen. And now from our temporary, socially distanced, alternative studios in exile, somewhere in the greater Houston area, this is Open Journal in Exile. Let the conversation begin.
Yes, yes, yes. Welcome aboard. You are tuned in to Open Journal, a special In Exile edition. It is Monday, the 10th of May, 2021 already. And it is our first show of KPFT's Spring Fun Drive. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for the gift of your time and support that allows us to be here with you. I'm Duane Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. This week, we'll be visiting with soccer broadcaster Glenn Davis. As always, this is a conversation, and we'd love to hear your opinions and suggestions. You can reach us via Twitter with the hashtag KPFTOJ or Facebook Open Journal. Check out this show and other shows on our podcast, KPFTOJ.
Mm-hmm. And we're posting new podcast editions rapidly. Yes. Maverick is on the stick with those. So look for a batch of new pods, freshly cast.
Indeed.
And as I mentioned, this is the first week of the Spring Fun Drive for KPFT and for Open Journal. And we'd love your help in reaching the overall goal for the station of raising a couple $100,000, not all from you, not all right here, not only from Open Journal, but our goal this hour is to raise a couple $100. So you can call the station's hotline, 713-526-5738, 526-KPFT, to help out with the cause of conscious communication. The phone crew is there, ready, willing, and able to take you through the transformation process from listener to listener sponsor of Houston's community station. We have a batch of fresh, brand new logo merchandise, including t-shirts, face masks, coffee mugs, caps, hoodies, all with the brand new KPFT logo. Thank Avail you. Yourself of that opportunity. Put it on a Visa, Discover, American Express, or MasterCard and make that quick, easy, and painless. The phone crew will be more than happy to explain your thank you options on this new KPFT logo merch and others. We can't do this without you, so we do appreciate your support. If it matters to you, and I bet it doesn't, it is tax deductible. To most of us, that means absolutely that much. But if it does, give big and give now and mention Open Journal. And if you do it through kpft.org, just scroll down into the memo section and mention Open Journal, and we would appreciate that. So we're going to be joining Glenn Davis to talk all things soccer in Houston, in Texas, in the United States, in the world of the glorious game called football, most everywhere but here. And he'll be with us in just a minute. But it is time for that weekly check-in. Take your best shot, the Houston Health Department update, Stephanie.
Indeed. Well, this is a quick and easy update. The Houston Health Department is, of course, still the place to go to find out where free vaccination spots are throughout the city. They are giving Moderna first and second shots. If you have missed that window, they are letting everyone know. Should you miss it by too great, you'll have to start the whole process over. So visit HoustonHealth.org for more information and details on that. We do not have herd immunity yet, but it does seem like it is possible if we just take these precautions of social distancing, wearing our masks, getting tested to know where we stand.
And wash those hands.
Wash those hands, and you can get your vaccine shot. I mean, we have come a long way, but let's just stay vigilant. And that's what the Houston Health Department would just like to keep reminding. So that's HoustonHealth.org. for more information on available testing and vaccine.
Yeah, and I hope that some folks are working through whatever mental reservations they have. This vaccine hesitancy issue is kind of perplexing. I have a brother-in-law who's out there in Katy and just can't seem to make that conscious choice to take his best shot. He's counting on all of us to give him a free ride. And I'm telling him, hey, buddy, help us all out because we still have a ways to go. We're not like right on the cusp a day away from saying, okay, the herd is immune. You get a free ride now. No, you got to do what we all need to do. So I've got a couple of quick calendar updates for you, Stephanie, and not touting free things, although this is free, but I don't have any tickets to tout or anything in terms of, you know, the museum to go to or the park where there's going to be a free performance, though there are so many things like that happening around. I mean, we just had a performance of Houston Grand Opera at the University of Houston football stadium outside, you know, for thousands and thousands of people on Saturday night. And there's lots of great cultural things. That's one of the phenomena that make Houston such a rich, rich place to call home. Is that here in the heart of the fourth, nearly third largest city in the United States, we have this myriad number of choices of cultural enrichment opportunities. I went the other day and just took a walk over in the Arboretum in Memorial Park and all their brand new facilities and trails. Beautiful. Get outside, breathe some fresh air, get some exercise. Go hear some music, do something good, do some yoga on the lawn, whatever, just do it. And in terms of a Open Journal centric calendar item, our next two programs, we try to stay like right on, you know, the cutting edge of current events, but we're actually planning a couple weeks ahead right now. And I can tell you that next week, you don't want to miss the next in our continued series of discussions on racism with Cherry Steinwender from the Center for the Healing of Racism and local author and activist Joel Goza. Cherry and Joel in the house on the 17th of May. And then on the 24th, all of these crazy things I'm hearing about voter suppression, voting rights being limited and things like that. We want to get the straight skinny on that too. So we're having an activist friend. Tamara is going to be in the house. We're going to be talking about that on the 24th with Tamara Sell. And so stay tuned for those upcoming editions of Open Journal. You are tuned in to Houston's community station, KPFT Pacifica Radio for the Upper Texas Gulf Coast and beyond, broadcasting 100,000 watts of stereophonic people-powered public radio. Thanks for joining us. Thank you for your support. I'm Dwayne Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman. Soccer, or football for most of the world, has a history that goes back 150 years to England. Soccer has long struggled to gain the mainstream American status of baseball, football, and basketball, or even hockey. Still, Houston, as the fourth largest city, now has two professional soccer teams, Houston Dynamo, male, and the Houston Dash for female team. There are several collegiate teams and many thousands of youth playing in leagues. And with some 2026 World Cup matches likely headed this way, soccer is definitely on the rise. With us this edition of Open Journal is sportscaster Glenn Davis, best known as lead play-by-play announcer for broadcast of the Houston Dynamo and his weekly radio show, Soccer Matters, with Glenn Davis. Davis has called World Cup matches, Olympic soccer games, MLS matches, collegiate soccer, and more. A pro soccer player in the 1980s, Davis has also coached youth soccer and works as a consultant. His charitable work includes a youth soccer camp titled Kick Cancer that features former and current players as coaches to raise money for pediatric cancer research. He also has a KPFT connection. Glenn Davis, we're happy to welcome you back to Open Journal.
Well, Stephanie, Dwayne, it's always great to be on. And the first thing I always have to say is I have to remind people that I got my start in radio because of Dwayne. He said it was okay for me to start crafting a soccer show. And that's what we did proudly at 90.1 KPFT. And this is where it all began. So, you know what? When you guys call, I'm here.
That's wonderful.
That's really great. So, well, specifically, when did that start for you, Glenn? When did KPFT open that door?
I believe that's probably 2002 in that neighborhood. So
yep.
I've been on the radio for, 17 years now, which, when I came to you, it was essentially, every morning you hear the Texans, the Rockets, the Astros. And, I was like, well, how do we get more attention for the game? And that was really the driving force behind it.
And that was several years before the Dynamo even were thinking about no longer being the San Jose Earthquakes and transforming into what became the Houston Dynamo. And as I recall, and correct me when you realize that I'm not spot on with this, but about that time when the then catty-cornered from KPFT commercial radio station, sports radio down the block at Kilt and KTRH and those stations on the AM side of the dial were realizing, hey, we're about to have professional soccer in Houston. Maybe we should start talking about real football. That's my air quotes around that. Who would they think to ask but someone who was already for years had been talking about it, had a background in it, and, just happened to be right down the block. And that was you.
What a transition.
Yeah, and at that time, I was also writing a column for the Houston Chronicle, so I was trying to use every medium possible to get more attention for the game. It's my passion. I didn't really consider it a job. I must have wrote MLS needs to come to Houston 25 times in the Houston Chronicle 25 different ways. I mean, it all worked. But I will have to tell you, the first entree that I got into commercial radio, the tipping point was the fact that I had $20,000 in sponsorship. So if I'm really telling the truth, they were like, hey, we like soccer. Yeah, we like soccer. We know who you are. Yeah, we're not sure. And then I said, well, I have $20,000 in sponsorship money. And they're like, you got a soccer show.
When can you start?
It's the details.
Glenn, do you consider, this is probably a loaded question, but do you consider Houston, or is Houston considered a soccer town?
Oh, no question about it. I just don't think we get that mainstream attention still. That's a big part of the problem. I think in recent times, the Dynamo have struggled. They've only made the playoffs one time in 7 years. They're not as relevant as we wish they could be, like in the early days. But the one thing that never fails is the tremendous attendance that we get for international games, whether at Energy or BBVA this summer with the Gold Cup or the women's national team coming. Those games sell like crazy. But remember, the foundation with which that's built on is, as you mentioned in the intro, is the youth soccer community. It's people from all over the world that are authentic soccer fans that still have not bought into the MLS product, and the adult community. So it's absolutely a great soccer city, and it has been for quite some time, and the interesting thing is it dates all the way back to the Astrodome. We had a pro team here in the late 60s. We had West Ham United with 1966 England captain when they won the World Cup, Bobby Moore, play against West Ham and Real Madrid in the Astrodome. That was the first ever soccer game. We've had teams like the Houston Stars in the 60s, the Hurricanes in the 70s, Summit Soccer, the Houston Dynamos in the 80s, Houston Hotshots, and now to the current Dynamo. So it is a soccer city.
Mm-hmm. You're quite the historian. It's really interesting as you talk about really that this isn't new. We're trying to get it to stick both in the city and in the country. What is the state you feel of soccer in the U.S.? And what are we, what's the perfect scenario? What is that tipping point that would be a place where you feel, all your advocacy really has paid off and you can look at the city or look at the states and say, this is how soccer should be?
Yeah, I love seeing people enjoy the game, whether it's participating by playing, by having healthy professional leagues, by being able to attend amazing games in cities all over the country. Reflecting on the history, youth being taught by wonderful coaches and mentors. That's what it's about for me. It has arrived. I mean, we have to understand, we're the only country in the world with three other traditional sports. That's before we mention hockey. Then you throw in lifestyle. So, You've got cities like Atlanta that are drawing 40,000 a game. You've got cities like Portland, Seattle, thriving, people trying to get tickets. Mm-hmm. Our market needs some improvement with the MLS side of it. There's no question. No question. But as far as the potential in certain markets around the country, it's remarkable. We have the top tier professional soccer, which is Major League Soccer, but then you have a whole bunch of other markets, like let's just say Louisville, Rio Grande Valley, Sacramento, that have second tier teams. And these clubs, in some cases, are drawing 7,000 to 10,000 people a game, but their mainstays in their community. So, you know, there's soccer in every shape and form all over this country. We have to get it through our thick heads sometimes. There's a lot more competition in this country than there is in countries around the world when it comes to sports and entertainment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, as we look at Houston in general, 2021 is coming around the corner. We do have Dynamo and Dash. Those teams are making a move. How do you feel we're shaping up for 2021?
Well, let's start with the Dash. They're going to get to play a full season here coming up, which is great. Prior to that, it's only been these tournaments. So I think for these professional players in the women's game, for them to know now that after this pandemic that they've got a full season, that they can really measure themselves against the best of the NWSL, who have tremendous players from all over the world. Now, they will take a little bit of a hit with the Olympics and some of the players off representing their countries. But I think that's really positive. For the Houston Dynamo, it's about trying to turn things around and becoming more relevant again. Both these clubs have that challenge. I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat it. They have that challenge to become more relevant in this town. The biggest asset the Houston Dynamo have right now is their head coach, Todd Ramos, who played in 3 World Cups. In fact, he's a little bit older, not as old as I am, but you know, I even played against him in the late 80s, so that kind of dates me a little bit. But he's been tremendous with the media. He's going to need the support. He's going to need the investment, the marketing side of it. But the things he's doing with the team after 3 games looks, to me, very, very positive. It's certainly an upgrade from last year. But they have challenges to turn it around, and they continue to work at it.
You're tuned to a special Open Journal in Exile edition here on KPFT, Houston's community station. We are visiting with soccer broadcaster and friend of the family, Glenn Davis. I'm Dwayne Bradley with Stephanie Coleman. Glenn, I wanted to follow up on MLS, Major League Soccer, and the NWSL, the National Women's Soccer League. The Dynamo and the Dash will just make it easier and just say that. What is it about soccer in the United States that differs from most of the rest of the world? The seasons are kind of out of sync. When we lose our players on international call-ups, the teams are still having to play games. I notice when I'm watching my Chelsea team playing over in England, when the international players are away, hey, they've got the whole team is off for 2 weeks. You either get to go home or go out to the practice pitch with the guys who aren't going off for national duty. But the team doesn't have to take a hit and play without some of their biggest stars. Why is MLS and the Women's League also out of sync with the rest of the world? What's that all about?
Yeah, we're not on the same international calendar, and that you make a very good point there, because transfer windows and all these other things that come with big business soccer, we're not really aligned. The stars are not aligned. I think a lot of that was to avoid competition with other sports leagues. There are a lot of people now that say, you know, why don't we just get on the international schedule? And then things like climate come into play. But the competition argument doesn't really sell with me anymore. There's competition everywhere. You have to be brave enough to face competition. Major League Soccer has sunk some good roots. The sport of soccer has sunk good roots. You don't need to be afraid of anything anymore. You don't need to be even reactive to people who don't like the game anymore. It's just grown too much exponentially. So I think a lot of it is fear with going head-to-head with some of the other American sports leagues in the world. But I think those days for me are over.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
Yeah. as we look at our own venues in Houston, and as you look at them for that impact and international pool, do you feel our stadium, BBVA Stadium, is a top flight soccer venue that attracts big names and big stars to town for our teams?
Yeah, it's a fantastic venue. And as we know, it was, built, I think the first game was 2011. Incredible asset to the city, just another wonderful facility, not a bad seat in the house. It's a remarkable facility. And then you tie that in with the big international games, like when Mexico goes with Energy, and you've got fantastic facilities, World Cup worthy facilities in 2026, no question about it. And I think the level of intimacy, when I played professional soccer in the 80s, nobody even had a discussion that there would ever be stadiums that would be built with soccer in mind, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you were playing in empty NFL stadiums. A lot of the ones I played in aren't even around. The Pontiac Silverdome has been blown up. That thing's gone. Gator Bowl, these were the types of places that you played. Sometimes there were football lines on there. So, and then here in Houston, our home games were in a high school facility, which really, from an intimacy standpoint, was better, because if you were getting 4,000 people or 5,000 people, they were close to you, whereas, 5,000 people in the Pontiac Silverdome, looked a
hello
little bit.
In there.
Yeah. Hey, where's my father? Is that you up in the 60th row there? Times have changed. The facilities are amazing. Austin has just built an unbelievable facility, taking it up another level now. These new stadiums that are coming in, we were like going, wow, this is amazing, BBVA. These new facilities coming in, they're just upping the bar each and every time a new franchise comes in.
Hey, another Dynamo-related question before we take a brief pause, Glenn. When do you think the Dynamo will invest in bringing one of these like top tier names that are going to like bring some feet into the seats, some butts into some chairs? A lot of the teams have brought in, names that are maybe past their prime. I remember, my brother and my good buddy that I go to Dynamo games with, they got to see Franz Beckenbauer and Pele playing, for the New York Cosmos back in the long ago days, and saw them up close because the crowds were not super huge. But even more recently, people, are being imported over, Rooney and Beckham and these big names that even people who are maybe not quite engaged yet with what can be the joy of real football. The Dynamo have invested in folks predominantly from South America, Central America, some great players. But I'm waiting for the day when they bring a name like out of one of the big European leagues, out of La Liga, out of the English Premier League, out of the Bundesliga or something like that. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think over the years that's been one of the things fans have always gone to. And I think what fans have to realize is their model of doing business is really not going to include that in the near future, I don't think. If it happens, it would be a big surprise. I don't think they're, at this point, willing to pay big transfer fees. Now, if you're sitting here and you're saying to yourself, would Chicharito Hernandez put people in the seats here? Of course he would. What would it cost to get him here? And some clubs in this league are willing to do that. Others aren't. The LA Galaxies of the world, the Atlanta Uniteds, they're the ones that are going to pay the bigger transfer fees. So there are models and different ways of doing things. They're trying to do it with less investment. I hope there's more investment in the future. They do hold a couple of designated player spots, which can be utilized for those kind of players. The type of player the Dynamo are bringing in now, really, Todd Ramos is bringing in guys that he has been connected through his coaching career. He's spent 10 years as the under-20 national team coach. So he's trying to bring a lot of these younger guys in that he's very familiar with, younger guys that have worked under him. And it's really now a little bit more about an overall system and the collective nature of a team as opposed both on and off the field to individuals, right? Would that be exciting? Absolutely. And to your brothers, I grew up by Giants Stadium. So, You know, I saw the New York Cosmos going from a team that played in front of a couple thousand people on a little island called Randall's Island next to Manhattan to all of a sudden, and it was like a blink of the eye with Beckenbauer and everybody joining Pelé, you know, 50,000 people for regular season games on a Wednesday night. World-class teams coming in to play the Cosmos, the stars that they had. Johan Niskens, who was on the 74 Dutch national team that went to the World Cup final. So I lived that whole thing. I'm considered what they call back then Cosmos kids because of the influence that we had. I'm no kid anymore. That's obvious. But a remarkable time to take me into the game of soccer and its beauties and influence me.
Mm-hmm. Glenn, we're going to continue this conversation in just a minute, but it's time for us to take a pause to refresh. Each week on Open Journal, we like to feature a song of the week from a local artist. And, you know, it's springtime. The weather's getting good. I want to go down to the beach. Maybe you do, too. So we went and dug out one of our albums called Planet of Surf, released in 2008 by a local band called the Neptunes. And it was recorded at the legendary Sugar Hill Studios right here in Houston. Bikini Atoll Beach Party is the Open Journal Song of the Week. And we'll be right back with Glenn Davis. Surf music to get us going on a nice spring day. That was Bikini Atoll Beach Party from the Neptunes. Open Journal's Song of the Week. If you'd like to suggest a local tune or a local group, just reach out to us on the socials. You are tuned in to Open Journal, a special In Exile edition during KPFT's Spring Pledge Drive. I'm Dwayne Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Coleman.
We are visiting with Glenn Davis of broadcast fame, Glenn Davis Soccer Matters radio show, Glenn Davis alum of KPFT and former professional soccer player and current professional soccer broadcaster. So we thank you for joining us and we thank you for your support. The way to engage with the support line, of course, either through kpft.org or 713-526-5738. That's 713-526-KPFT, the phone number. Stephanie, have you checked out any of the new KPFT logo merchandise, the t-shirt, the mug, the cap, the hoodie, the face masks that are available?
I have, and I think there's always something wonderful about having historic KPFT gear.
Yeah, I'm pitching my dad on a new KPFT hoodie, even though he hardly wears the last one I got him. You know, if you're listening right now and you'd like one of these KPFT new multicolored logo, you can see the logo at kpft.org. It's a very cool design, chosen by We the People in a vote that was held, you know, publicly over the last several months. And it's been embroidered onto caps. It's been thrown up on t-shirts. You can put it on a mask in these waning pandemic months. But, you know, people may start wearing masks more generally like they used to. And I used to think it was strange and maybe only in Tokyo or something that people seem to wear masks a lot, or in China, because maybe the air is so foul in these hyper-industrialized, you know, sprouting like a mushroom kind of cities that they're throwing up over there. But that's actually, as it turns out, a fairly smart move that they've been protecting themselves and others from them. Now we're learning that lesson, and you can learn it while being embroidered with a KPFT logo. $50 will get you a matched set of face masks, or for a smooth Benjamin, get 5. Such a deal. Talk to the folks at the pledge line, 713-526-5738 or 526-KPFT for more info on that and other cool gifts, including, you know, some great rare recordings that are only made by and through KPFT events going back to, you know, the dawn of KPFT's time. I have some old tapes from the early 1980s that have been digitized, from the Juneteenth Blues Festival in 1984, from KPFT's quinceañera party that we held at the music hall. The building doesn't even exist. Several of the artists who played are only playing in the sky now, but we've got the tapes from back in 1985, and you can have a set of digital recordings from that. Talk to the folks about those as well. You know, either the Picker Poet tapes of 1985, the Juneteenth Blues Festival from 1984. KPFT was there with reel-to-reel tapes. Great sound, great artists, great events, great piece of musical history, KPFT's history, your history if you wish. And whatever it is you can do, if you can do a lot, do it. If you can't do much, do what you can. If you can't do anything, but you'd like to, well, we appreciate that. That's what a community is all about. We'll help you along until maybe that day down the road when you can pick up someone else who's tuned into KPFT and would like to help, but just isn't in that fortunate position of being able to right now. So to those of you who can and do, thank you. To those of you who wish you could and can't, we're sorry, but thank you for being there as well. And all together, we make up the community. And this is Houston's community station. So there you have it. Thanks for being here with us. Thanks for what you can do and what you have done. I'm Dwayne Bradley.
And I'm Stephanie Cole. Clearly my signal is going to be a virtual experience. So Dwayne, please.
Yeah, so I believe that Stephanie's question was, why do you, in your observation of both the local soccer scene and as a global participant and observer, why do you think it is that soccer is so much loved around this entire world?
All you need is a ball, something to kick, simplicity. The fascination with a ball, you know, we have to remember a lot of the world is third world countries, right? And you find ways of enjoyment through simplistic ways, which is actually a beautiful thing. That's why they call it the beautiful game, right? Mm-hmm. How many times have we heard people say that? So I really think it's that simplicity. And then, of course, the history and how far back it dates and the reference points that everybody has. You know, your reference point, Dwayne, may be different than mine. You know, there's people that their introduction to professional soccer was 2006 Houston Dynamo that have no idea there was professional soccer here in the late 60s, don't know about it. I don't think we've done a good job of explaining our incredible depth of soccer history in this town. We haven't. And that's something I try to work on all the time through my platforms. But I just think globally it's the simplicity. And as years go by here in the United States with its popularity, its growth at differing levels, more and more people are getting on board with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's spot on. It's such an easy thing. You don't need to make any major investment. Almost anyone can play. You don't have to have been blessed with, you know, extraordinary huge muscles. You just have to have the ability to run around. That's a real blessing, I think, that kids everywhere around the planet, you can take an old T-shirt and wrap duct tape around it and make it into a ball and kick it around and make a game of it. Very little investment is necessary in terms of gear. And like you said, anyone can play, boys, girls, young, old. I wanted to touch on something that's come up recently in the news here. For those of us who are able to access soccer beyond Houston, beyond what we can read in the papers, recently over in Europe, there's been this Super League issue where six big teams, including, I'll say mine is Chelsea, other London teams like Tottenham and Arsenal were involved in this, the two Manchester teams, Liverpool, joined by a couple of teams in Spain, a couple of teams in Italy. They're going to make this sort of select league where only the creme de la creme as it currently exists would be in. And we're going to invite a few friends and then maybe let a couple of others get drafted into this game. And we're going to get to play each other all the time and thereby make big money all the time because our names are big draws. That went over like a huge lead balloon. And even led to the couple weekends ago cancellation of arguably one of the biggest matches of the season, Manchester City, points away from locking up the title, taking it back from the current title holder, Liverpool, and people basically shutting the game down. Manchester United, Old Trafford, the kind of like Fenway Park of football stadiums.
Yeah, sacred grounds. Sacred grounds.
So give me your feedback on all of this, because the whole thing just blew up The repercussions, the elements of what they're calling neo-hooliganism running rampant.
Yeah, so let's take this, and I'll give you my Cliff Notes versions. First of all, you talked about the breakaway league. That breakaway league with all the big clubs was designed in some ways to eliminate competition, to make sure you knew how much revenue was coming in every year. There was no skin in the game as concerns to relegation, which means if you have a poor season, you get dropped down and lose tons and tons of monies. These owners got together. This was planned. It has been in the works. And basically, they wanted to share all this TV money, all the revenues, no skin in the game, know how to budget every year, and protect themselves. And it was very avaricious and greedy, in my humble opinion. No question about it. So what happened was the fans stood up to it and became the gatekeepers of the game. And there was a big revolt. And these guys miscalculated this beyond belief. Now, you would think these people, with the amount of staff that they have and data and analysis, that they would have gotten this right. They totally missed the target on this. Totally missed the target. They got the backlash. They had to pander and come back crawling to the fan bases, and it got essentially shut down. Now, they'll storm the castle again one day, and the whole reason they're going to storm the castle again one day is because they look at the NBA, the NFL, and Major League Baseball, and they see how the teams in those leagues are monetized, and it's more than European soccer, and they want that. And these owners, in a lot of ways, have not the deep-rooted passion for the game that many people do. Now, you're talking about, when you're talking about the English teams, you're talking about communities and cities that are built in and around these teams, and obviously they still have protectors. What happened at Manchester United with the protest turned ugly, and people broke into the stadium. Those, to me, are not passionate soccer fans. They're running around on the hallowed grounds of George Best and Duncan Edwards and the Holy Trinity and guys like Bobby Charlton, you know, all these famous, remarkable names. They look like kids to me that were drunk taking selfies. I don't consider those Manchester United fans. And that's a mistake to me. I know there's some people who really didn't have a problem with that. I have a problem with that. That's trespassing. That's sacred ground. You don't go in there. I'm 100% behind the protest against the Glazers, done in the proper way, without a doubt, because the Glazers for 16 years have run Manchester United and taken tons of money out of it and have not reinvested. I've been at the stadium about, 16, 17 months ago. You could see at the inside of it, there's leaks in the roof. There's some of the guts of the building that really needs upgrade and repair, and it hasn't been put back into the club. So that's why people are incredibly upset. They haven't paid down their debt with it. They haven't reinvested in the club. These are the things that fans are upset about. So the United fans were set off by the European Super League, but they already had a lot of angst around the Glazers, who also own the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who won, you know, the Super Bowl. So there was a lot of angst already built up there. And there may be more problems with it. And they did cancel a game. And I'm all for the peaceful protest. I think you have a lot. Alcohol gets involved with these things. You have people that come in and co-opt these events for the wrong purpose. And that's what makes it a bit of a problem. But you know, there's a big push against big money and avaricious, greedy owners. And remember, we have three American owners over there, Kroenke at Arsenal, the Glazers at Manchester United, and the Henry Group at Liverpool, who are the Boston Red Sox. So, you know, they're getting hit pretty hard, although they're no more greedy probably than the other owners, who happen to be Italian or Spanish also. So they're all in the greed category. You know, we look at the game now and how much of it is about money now and all these other things. The purists and maybe people that are a little older like me, I want it to be about the players and the teams and, you know, to watch Chelsea and see what they did minute one to minute 90 against Real Madrid and dominate every facet of that game and do it so spectacularly and do it in a way that they just handcuffed Real Madrid and made them look rather ordinary. It was pretty remarkable. Those are the things I look for, Dwayne.
Yeah. Well, I was wanting to touch on that and ask you about the upcoming Champions League final, which will be an all-English final. Chelsea, my team. I say my team because I've followed them as long as I've been watching European soccer, but my roots with them predate my real knowledge of them, because when I was helping start a soccer team at Memorial High School here in Houston, when there were no high school soccer teams around in Houston, we got together and the school wouldn't allow us to have a team. So we talked to a teacher that let us use her room after school, posted notes for a meeting to form a soccer club. We called ourselves the Memorial Soccer Club. We had to come up with our own logo. We ended up wearing maroon and white jerseys that had the Chelsea logo on it because one of our guys, my buddy Lee, had grown up in London and loved that logo. And he, while not born a Chelsea fan, became one. And so we, you know, sort of unwittingly adopted the Chelsea logo as the Memorial Soccer Club logo back in the very early, well, in 1970, actually. And it went on from there. So I didn't realize I was a Chelsea fan in 1970, but I'm actively engaged now. And I've even been going to some matches down at, to watch with the Chelsea Supporters Club, the Bayou City Blues down at King's Court, right across the street from the Dynamo Stadium. And it's it's kind of wild and fun to be in that kind of an atmosphere. Less of the throwing of beer bottles at officers happen there for sure.
Well, like-minded individuals. By the way, you wouldn't have wanted to have been a Chelsea fan and actually go to a game in the 70s, because that's when hooliganism was really rampant. I mean, that it was a dangerous place to go back in those days, and now we see how it's been modernized, and hooliganism has been brought under control. Apart from that little incident we saw with fans breaking into stadiums. But, you know, back to one of your earlier questions, you guys organizing a team in a league, that's a way of influencing and bringing the sport to the attention of others. So well mm-hmm. done to you.
Mm, well, thanks. I did the same thing when I went to Baylor a couple of years later. There was no team. We posted a note in the gym. We ended up, again, forming our own team. About 3 years later, we actually were able to get the administration to give us PE credit for actually doing this. But we schedule games against, you know, UT, A&M, SMU, other schools. But we had to do that on our own. And it was not anything that was a school sport. And it's nice to see that this, what I've always thought of as like the most universal of sports, because it's so easy to gain the equipment and the knowledge and the skills. Though I've never been a great soccer player, I'll always hope be able to just kick a ball around with my son or with some friends, and that's one of the wonderful things about it. What was it that made you, when you were young, Glenn, what was it that brought you to playing soccer as a youth?
Yeah, I was very fortunate. I had a coach that came out of urban area into the suburbs. When I grew up, the sport was based in ethnic areas all around New York City, across from Manhattan, were, you know, Scottish pockets like in Kearny, New Jersey. Bayonne had Portuguese. There were German areas. These were all very defined. This is where soccer was being played. And I had a coach who, through another connection, that would come out to the suburbs 4 or 5 nights of the week and work with us. And when I got a little bit older, I asked him if, you know, the idea there was to take suburban kids and teach them the game properly, because he'd take us into those areas. We'd play on dirt fields. You know, there'd be all kinds of incidents we'd had to deal with. It was a tremendous soccer education. I had a brother who played and was an All-American in college, got drafted professionally by Washington. And then, of course, I had the Cosmos. So I had a lot of tremendous influences, but none greater than my youth coach, who, you know, I modeled a lot of my coaching sessions and the things that I spoke with young kids in a soccer club that I started called the Hurricane Soccer Club here in Houston. Off things he said, lessons. I mean, I don't go a day where that man doesn't pop into my mind. That's how influential he was. And, you know, he recently passed, and it was a very sad day for me. But, you know, the things he did for us young kids in a place called Chatham, New Jersey, was absolutely incredible. And so I had great influences from a number of different areas.
Yeah. And it's great that you not only played it, grew up playing it, but then were coaching it. You also have had this youth soccer camp, Kick Cancer. Will that be gearing back up? Are you going to looking at post-pandemic having Kick Cancer camps returning for kids?
Yeah, they slowed down. We have one group that really has done a tremendous job with that, and I want to mention them. That's the Dynamo Soccer Club, headed up by Olivier Finidori and Jim Walker, who was involved in the North American Soccer League and the pro team I was on. They've done a great job. So that, you know, once we can get back to doing those types of camps, we will. You know, the other thing we do under that umbrella is we have soccer balls and we visit the hospital with some cancer patients that have survived and beaten cancer. And, you know, we go there, and the soccer ball is just a great icebreaker, walking into a room. And you know, we have the smaller sizes for some of the smaller, younger patients, and the bigger size fives for older kids. But it's really about getting in there and just using the ball as an icebreaker, and then talking to the parents, talking to the kids. Remarkable moments occur. Freddie Reyes, who goes in there with me, Eileen Dowd, we're both patients at Texas Children's, and I never forget this one time we went in a room, and it wasn't a very happy room, and a young man had cancer and, you know, was laying in his bed, and his mom was there. And so Freddie Reyes asks him, what type of cancer you have? And the young boy responds, and Freddie looks at him and goes, oh, I beat it 3 times. All of a sudden, wow. The young man's eyes open. He lifts himself up. His mother gets off the couch, comes over to him and hugs him. And now we have this incredible living, breathing example right there, which no athlete or nobody else who's ever gone through, unless you've gone through that, you can't, you know, I can't replicate Freddie Reyes or Eileen Dowd. That's the reason I recruited them, because I said, who could be the most influential outside of athletes or somebody that, you know, they recognize? Who would be the most influential? And that's people that have survived cancer. And these are remarkable people with remarkable will. I mean, my great friend Tom Clare, who's an author right now, who I flew over to Manchester with, has been in this just god-awful battle with cancer. He's written some amazing books, and all on Manchester United and the history. And this guy just has the most remarkable attitude that just makes you go, you know, I'm just not worthy to be around this guy. And number two, if I ever complain about any little thing, you know, just slap me in the face and wake me up, you know? So these are people that I've become close with, families that have lost children that have really, they don't know it, but have been remarkable influences for me in life.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Glenn, as we're getting close to needing to wrap this conversation, I wanted to just touch base with you on how your past year has gone, you know, professionally, personally, pandemically.
So it's been a year of learning. It's been a year of sadness. Lost two friends to COVID. Had a nephew get it in the early stages in Italy, who still to this day has accelerated heart rate. Immense fatigue. This is a kid that could dunk a basketball, was as athletic as could be, has some real struggles, some days where he really has to push to get through the days. It's been rough. Both my parents got it about 2 months ago, 94, 95 years of age. My father is a Marine from World War II in Okinawa, and he didn't even have a single symptom, which is hard to believe. My mother almost lost her. We were prepared to lose her on a weekend. She has battled back remarkably. I'm about to go up to see her. She's still in a facility on the mend. But, you know, so it's been up and down. I learned a lot about myself. I was determined not to let this be a year of, oh, woe is me. Mm-hmm. You know, yoga, more reading, using the time efficiently, organizing a house, any small victories every day that I could come up with. You know, I do 100 push-ups every day and 100 sit-ups. You know, little things to keep the sanity, the positivity. And then, you know, the other wonderful thing was, Dwayne, and I know I told you this, is fortunately, you know, the year before I put in a studio at my house. So I was able to continue some level of normalcy by continuing to host radio shows in both Houston and Austin. The TV work went away for most of the year. We had a little blip there for a couple months where that kind of came back under, you know, social distancing and very careful protocol. Some games out of BBVA, kind of an aborted season for Major League Soccer. So learning, sadness, but also a lot of positivity. You know, I've really tried to train myself as I've gotten older into looking to be positive.
Yeah. Well, I've always considered you to be that kind of a human dynamo, so to speak. And I do appreciate your willingness to get out there and do what you do and to represent for soccer and your community outreach work. And congratulations on your success with all of your endeavors in broadcasting. Since you were just a little broadcast radio pup at KPFT a couple of decades ago, is the best way for people to keep up with all things Glenn Davis, glenndavissoccer.com? Is that a good initial
access? Yeah, that's one. Twitter, Glenn Davis Sock, SOC. I mean, I just love getting the word out about the radio shows. We have tremendous guests on from all over the world. Had people on from Manchester, Barcelona. So very passionate and fueled to put together great shows every week, just like you guys are with your content. And you want it to be the best, and you want somebody to walk away going, wow, that was a great show. You know, whether it was an interview or a topic, whatever it was, work really hard at those things and want to deliver to the people listening and watching.
Well, we enjoy having you and considering you a friend. Before we go, Glenn, I got to get your best guess on what's going to happen in Istanbul the end of May in the Champions League final over in Europe. Between, you know, this blue team, Chelsea, and this other, like, powder blue team, the Manchester City. I'm pulling for Chelsea, you know that, but professionally, you're an unbiased opinion.
Yeah, so I would just say a couple of things real quick, and guess is a good word, because I think both teams are capable of winning this thing in Turkey. I think it's a game where Manchester City, like always, probably has a little bit more of the ball, although Chelsea's capable of carving out possession of their own. What I see is a game with City, you know, pressing the attack with a team defending a little bit deeper in Chelsea, and Chelsea can break out. I mean, whether it's Mason Mount, whether it's Werner, our American Christian Pulisic, who's going to make history playing in this game. Mm-hmm. We have a backup goalkeeper on City named Zach Steffen. This is historic for America. So I don't really have a prediction. What I have a prediction of is this will be a great game, and there are a couple of soft underbellies for both teams, but not many. And I just can't wait for it. I think it's also a big statement for the Premier League as being the greatest league in the world.
I would have to agree. And, you know, that says something about those guys down in Spain at Real Madrid and Barcelona who were the main impetus behind this aborted Super League concept. So, Glenn Davis, thanks for everything. It's been great spending some time with you, as always. We appreciate you, and we thank you for joining us on this special edition of Open Journal in Exile. I'm Dwayne Bradley, and I'm also here for Stephanie Coleman, my co-host, who was abruptly disconnected by some bad power people somewhere. We'll be bringing her back post-haste to join us on the next edition of Open Journal, and we invite you to join us next week for another edition. Check kpft.org for an archive of this program. Subscribe to our podcast, KPFTOJ. Send us your feedback, and also pledge your support if you can. A little bit means a lot. You know, it doesn't have to be, you know, thousands of dollars, hundreds of dollars, $10, you know, $5 a month, whatever warms your heart or is willing to leave your wallet or pocketbook would mean a lot to us, just to see your name on a list saying, hey, we like the show. We like what you do. We want you to stick around. We like KPFT. 713-526-KPFT, 526-5738. Or kpft.org, 713-526-5738 is the phone number. They'll take you through the process quick, easy, and painless. We are a dedicated all-volunteer production staff, including myself and my co-host, Stephanie Coleman, along with Ramblin' Rick Campbell, Susan Phillips, and Maverick, and all of our supporters, you. We couldn't do it without you, so thank you. Open Journal theme music provided by Kevin McLeod. Be here with us next week for a special edition conversation with Cherry Steinwender and Joel Goza. Thanks again for your support. We always leave you with a thought to carry you through the week. I had some soccer thoughts in mind. One came from Alex Morgan, who said, I want young girls to dream about being professional soccer players instead of just watching the boys go out and play. Or how about this thought from Eduardo Galeano, who said, the fiesta of soccer, a feast for the legs that play and the eyes that watch, is much more than a big business run by overlords from Switzerland. The most popular sport in the world wants to serve the people who embrace it. Or finally, a thought from Zico, who said, I believe that soccer can be an example of understanding and peace between countries and between peoples. Take care of each other. Peace.